Welcome into the latest edition of the ESPN FC podcast. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol here in the studio. Later on in the show, former Premier League referee Mark Clattenburg will be with us, Luis Garcia and Gab Marcotti joining us as well as we kick things off in La Liga. A huge result at the Camp Nou, well, certainly for Cardiff, the team that started the day in the relegation zone, taking all 3 points with a 1-0 victory over a very flat Barcelona side. That lifts them out of the relegation zone, 2 points clear of Mallorca in 18th. And really, it's all about Real Madrid when it comes to the championship now. They are all but home and hosed, 15 points clear with 6 games to go. Let's welcome in, shall we, Luis Garcia to the show. Luis, Ronald Koeman's back in charge.
We have a look to the results. Yeah, he might be back very soon again. Yeah, not the best performance, Dan. Not the best performance of this Barcelona. It wasn't good enough. We were asking for a little bit more speed in the first 45 minutes. We saw a little bit better in the second one, but it was already too late. I think that Cardiff, we have to give it a lot of credit to Sergio González's team because they definitely put an amazing performance. Superb. I mean, Ledesma, the keeper, has been outstanding. We've seen Fali, who is a player who even was linked back on the days with Barcelona, making an amazing game for his team. And a Barcelona team that it doesn't matter how he's playing. Dembélé was the key player, the one who put the more danger on this team. But at the end, it's the last third, the last pass, the last chance when you have to keep capitalize all those plays where Barcelona didn't do it tonight. Ferran Torres once again missing a few chances, not getting involved into the game. Aubameyang arrived maybe too late on the game. And Luke de Jong that just had one touch, probably one of the best chances of this team. So at the end, overall, full credit to these Cadiz that 3 points are giving them life to continue in this La Liga competition. One more year, probably.
I blame those 300 Cadiz fans, Sally.
Ah, yes, it is their fault indeed. Now, there is zero difference, and I mean zero difference, between what we saw today from Barcelona and what we saw from Barcelona whenever Ronald Koeman was on the sideline. It was essentially the same performance. In fact, I would argue it's even worse because you actually have better players on the field. The players that you acquired in the January transfer window were also on the field right now, available to Xavi, and this team had nothing in terms of creativity. Everything too slow, everything predictable, everything side to side, and the best chances in this game went to Cadiz in transition. Oh, wait a minute, if we had seen this before, when have we seen this before? We just saw it last week, Eintracht Frankfurt. We saw it the week before against Levante. We saw it the week before against Eintracht Frankfurt in the first leg. These transitions from Barcelona continue to be a problem, and they're even more of a problem when their possession is not quick enough in order for them to create quality opportunities. And when they do create quality opportunities and they put themselves in good positions to do something offensively, then the final decision is simply not there. Dembélé, for as good a player as he is, for as much of a difference maker as he can be for Barcelona, he is also quite a frustrating player because he is the He almost did something good, but not quite. Too many of those sequences for Barcelona today. It looked like Barcelona was back in the Ronald Koeman era and not in the good part of the Ronald Koeman era, in the one in which he was about to get fired. That sort of time, that sort of performance, that's what we saw from Barcelona today.
Luis, it's interesting. We talked beforehand saying that Cadiz were almost playing with free money going into this tie. Given the fact they'll take a look at their run-in, they'd have picked matches where they could get points to get them out of the relegation zone. This is a huge, huge result for them, and obviously gives them great momentum now going forward in their push for survival.
Yeah, exactly. And after they saw that Mallorca got a fantastic 3 points against Atletico de Madrid just a couple of weeks ago, they needed something like this one, something that they can give them the hope, the way, at least to try to see the last part of the season with a little bit of that hope can give you and the confidence to play. And today, something that they were not expecting. 1-1 draw could have been fantastic even for them. But when they saw that this Barcelona were not able to create clear chances, that they could have even the opportunity to even score the second one, because we saw Alex missing a fantastic chance, they continue believing. And I think Sergio made a great move when he put another centre-back at the back to try to hold all those crosses from Barcelona, from Adama, from Ferran Torres or Dembele on the left side. And these 3 points, definitely, as you will mention, they are going to give it the hope to continue working, continue believing that they can be playing in La Liga next week. But definitely, they were not expecting to get anything from tonight's game.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Been a dream, really, hasn't it, for Real Madrid watching on. Barca out of the Europa League, of course, beat Sevilla. Now Barca losing today. Reflecting on that extraordinary match at the Sanchez Pizjuan, the front page of AS going, this is Madrid. Marca going, giving their all. It was, of course, as we discussed on yesterday's show, a game that was just littered with controversial calls. So who better to bring in and to sort this all out? Mark Clattenburg is with us, the former Premier League referee. Klatz, let's go through this. Let's do it chronologically, shall we? That means we go from the earliest one to the latest.
All right, good.
We'll start
good.
In the 18th minute, shall we, where Real Madrid felt they should have had a penalty. Should it have been given?
Yeah, as the ball gets played in and the cross comes in, it looks like the goalkeeper, there is a foul, but then when the hand goes up onto the arm, that's probably where the first foul is and not the foul afterwards. So therefore, when the ball is handled by the defender, therefore, there was a second movement, and for me, this is a penalty kick.
Mark, where's all your hair gone?
maybe on my chin.
Luis, were you surprised that they didn't even send the referee to the monitor for that?
Yeah, definitely, because it's clear that the ball is touched by the arm. The movement of the arm is away. Well away from his body, and the ball changed the direction. He's in front of the goal, and another player could have had the chance of maybe kicking it into the goal. So I was surprised again that the referee didn't see it, and much more that the VAR didn't get him to at least tell him to go to check on the screen. And once again, is where we're still thinking about when VAR is going to be used properly, because there are so many different ways to see it, and we are not 100% sure about how it works.
OK, so Real Madrid 1, Sevilla 0. Let's take it to 7 minutes before half-time. Camavinga, already on a yellow card, brings down Martial. Not even a foul given. Mark, should this have been a second booking?
This is probably where the referee got a bit scared, because he probably realised this player's already on a yellow card and he's thinking it's probably easier not to give a free kick. Once he gives a free kick, which it is, you see it's a two-on-one situation, so therefore it's a promising attack and should have been a yellow card.
Luis?
Yeah, it looks... Again, it's difficult because the referee in first instance cannot see maybe touching. Maybe he thought that he touched a little bit the ball and maybe he had the doubt. VAR cannot get in because he is not going to be a red card. But for us that we have the replay, is definitely a yellow card. And, well, one less player for Real Madrid, that it was already 2-0. So the game would have been totally different in the second half.
Klatz, on that point, that's right, yeah? Because it's a yellow card, VAR can't intervene. From a referee situation, if he does give that second yellow and it's red, can that be retracted?
Yeah, no, there's ways, and some of the best VARs in the world from different countries can find different scenarios how to solve this, because when this is such a clear second yellow, even though he can't interfere, because what they don't want to do is look at every yellow card in isolation, so they don't want to get involved in second yellows, what the VAR could have said was, do you not think this is a red card? And then they could have found a solution. So some of the best VARs will help the referee immediately over the communication kit, because all we want is the right decisions. And this is probably one of the decisions which infuriates everyone when it's so clear-cut and the VAR cannot interfere.
So, Real Madrid won, Sevilla won, if we're keeping count. Let's take it into the second half. 2-1 to Sevilla at this stage. Real Madrid thought they'd equalise through Vinicius Jr. The referee blows the whistle against the Real Madrid player for a handball. VAR then sends him over to the monitor, and Marky's stubborn. He's not changing his mind.
Wow, this is interesting, because what he can't do is he can't blow his whistle till the ball goes inside the goal, because if he blows before the ball goes inside, the VAR cannot interfere. So what he does, he blows as the ball's entered the goal. And what he's looking at, has that been a handball? And when the law change was brought in at the start of the season, they said the sleeve, the top of the arm, if the ball strikes that part of the body, therefore it's not a handball. And the VAR has given them the lifeline to recheck the incident, and he stayed with his original decision, which shocks, because when you look at the video, it clearly strikes the top of his arm, and therefore, for me, this goal should have stood.
We were watching this together, weren't
he's
we?
He's actually... The referee... I mean, the greatest thing about what we just saw there is that's what the referees are shown. The referees are told that if it strikes anywhere between there and there, it's not a handball. He's running on back onto the field, pointing to where
yes.
It says it's not handball,
yep.
But gives handball. Wow.
What's incredible, and Mark used a good phrase there, the referee's been given a lifeline.
Yes.
You made a mistake, whatever happened in real play, you've got a chance now to make amends.
Yes.
No one's going to question you if you change your mind, that's fine, that's why VAR is there.
Right.
But he was stood at the monitor for so long.
I can tell you with 100% certainty, Dan, that he went to the monitor looking for any reason.
Yeah.
And I mean any reason to hang on to his call. He had no intention whatsoever in changing his call and admitting that he had made a mistake. And I mean, he is pointing at the smallest detail possible and saying, look, I think that's a handball. And now, to the point that Stevie was making, he now points at his sleeve, that's not a handball. That is not a handball. What he pointed at is not a handball according to the current laws of the game. The game is gone. It's gone.
How does he get this so wrong, Mark? Why is he so stubborn?
That's all it is. It's stubborn because when you watch Champions League, when you watch the Premier League, you very rare see a referee stay with his original decision. Always, they give the lifeline, they go and check the monitor and they reverse the decision. Because that's why the VAR's interfered. And I know we keep talking about, and Steve Nicol always has a go at me every time I come on this show about clear and obvious error. But my God, the VAR has given him a chance to clearly show him where the ball hit. Because in real time, it can be different. But come on, this is a shocker. When you go to the screen, you're given a chance to actually see it and give the correct decision. To give it and actually point to his sleeve. Which is even more bizarre. It's a crazy one.
So, Real Madrid 2, Sevilla 1, if we are keeping count. Late on, though, Sevilla had the chance to equalise. This was really in the dying minutes. Sevilla just lumped the ball into the box. And it's the foul here from Carvajal, or the non-foul, depending on how you look at it, which is what we want to bring up, Mark. What do you think?
No, I think, for me, in the last moments of the game, it has to be absolutely clear and crystal. I think the defender's very clever. He uses his body.
No.
I think he uses his body in such a way. For
you
me,
can't
I would
be
never
serious, Mark. You can't be serious. It has to be crystal clear. How crystal clear do you... Is there a level of crystal clear here? Let me ask you one very simple question. Does Carvajal bang into the back of the forward? With his shoulder?
Yeah, I think always in this type of incident, players, especially at corner kicks, attacking free kicks, there's always a bit of holding and pushing. And I just think he's done enough. I don't
this
think
this is assault.
There's enough.
He's been, he's been absolutely.
Calm down.
Seriously.
Calm down.
All right.
Bring that back.
I might have got there. I might have got a little far with
bring
the assault. But the fact is, Mark, there's two things. He makes no attempt to go for the ball whatsoever and just barrels into the back of the forward for no apparent reason. So how is it not a foul? Look.
I just think, Yeah, Stevie. And this is going to, what we'll always say is, look,
I mean,
when
seriously.
He goes in, he just does enough. I think he just does enough. I don't think it's a clear foul. And once the referee does, he give it for me.
Wow. Mark, if this is the 20th minute and it's 0-0, does he give it?
Fuck, that's always, we'll always think differently. And I suppose, even though we're probably wrong, certain decisions at certain times. But for me, at this part of the game, and there's just enough where there is a contact, there is in the back, he doesn't push him with his two hands, it's more of the shoulder, and I think it's an easing out, and I think for me, it's just enough to let the referee that on the pitch and not for the VAR to interfere.
Luis?
Listen, and I don't want to put a precedence here for the future, but I'm with Mark this time. I think this is a block that we can see very often. Actually, if you see the same image once again, if you don't look to that part, you can look to Rodrigo. He's doing exactly the same with Mono, with the keeper. He's holding him, he's blocking him. He's through the Carvajal and right with a little bit more speed, but what he's trying to do is block, not allowing him to play. But you don't see that he's pushing with the hands. He's just using his body. He's stopping over right there, and we see this kind of moments so many times. So I understand that why the referee, I understand what he says, that in the last moment, if you don't have a clear penalty, if you see a soft one, you're going to, if it's a touch, it's a touch. And I know that Ali's waiting for me to say, no, if it's a touch, it's going to be a penalty. But definitely for me, in this occasion, it's a block and there is not a penalty over there.
Boo!
See?
Boo! Boo! No, the only thing I'm booing is that you cannot come on the show, Luis, and agree with Mark. Because you can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah, there's rules. There's rules here.
It's my first time with Mark, so I know for next one.
Can I cover this a different way?
All right, here we go.
Whatever way you want. Just don't mention the salt.
So rather than me saying that's a clear foul, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
If I'm his coach and I'm watching this game back again, the next day in training, I'm walking straight up to him and I'm going to go, what are you doing that for?
Right.
So I'm not just coming from a want-to-argue point of view. If I'm this guy's coach, I'm coming up to him and saying, the last kick of the ball and you do that for no apparent reason. One, the guy's not getting the ball, so why are you even blocking him?
Does he know he's going to get away with it? Is that why he does it, Steve?
I don't think so. When you're doing something like that, you don't know that you're going to get away with it. But to actually run and put your shoulder into somebody, I mean, it's into his back. It's not even like shoulder to shoulder. It's straight into the guy's back. Listen, they don't think it is, but I think it is. And as I said, if I'm his coach, I'm pulling him up and saying, what are you doing?
This has, of course, been the talk of both the Spanish or the Barcelona media, the Real Madrid media as well. Real Madrid getting that victory. But it wasn't only one Madrid-based side who maybe got the rub of the green. This Atletico Madrid game is ridiculous. So, they're 1-0 up. And, maybe it's not ridiculous. Martin put us straight here. Can Dog be a second
right.
yellow? What's going on?
No, not for me. It's once the ball comes off his teammate. And the problem is, this word is it a save or a deliberate play? The defender who goes to block the ball doesn't want to handle the ball. It's come off his teammate, it's hit his arm, and okay. The problem is, because it's a shot on goal, they'll automatically say once you give the foul and the handball, it's going to be a yellow card because it's a shot on goal. But it just doesn't feel right that two players go to play the ball, it ricochets off his defender or his teammate's foot onto his arm, which is trying to block the ball, just seems very, very harsh. And for me, it would have been easier just to play on.
Former Athletic man, Luis Garcia.
Now what can I say? I cannot agree with Mark.
You can agree.
That's okay.
When Mark gets it right, agree.
No, I think he's totally right. I think in this moment, what can he do? I mean, it's not possible. He's not trying to get himself do bigger. The ball comes from a rebound, so there is no. If you can ask for a fall because if the ball goes to his hands, fine. But there is no intention over there whatsoever to try to stop that shot because it comes from a rebound. So I don't see that yellow card coming on.
So Espanyol score from the free kick, and then something quite extraordinary happens in the 97th minute. Uh-huh. Out of nowhere, out of nothing, Atleti are awarded a penalty. The referee is sent to the monitor. We've seen this so many times, Mark, and I still don't get it.
Yeah, and I had to watch it around about 10 times. And what I do see is the body language of the player that touches the ball. And watch his body language, he knows. Because I think he actually, the ball comes off his elbow and it doesn't come off his leg. What I thought first was the ball came off the knee and then the ball came out. But the VAR checked, I think, from the reverse angle, and I think it actually hit his elbow. But watch his body language of the player. He tries to pretend, look, he turns his body in such a way, and I just think he knows he's handled it.
Is this the right use of VAR?
Well, see, here's, look, what I can tell, I can understand what Mark is saying, but are we now body language experts? Are we now evaluating what the body language of a player is in order for VAR to make a call? And if indeed that's the case, isn't that re-refereeing the game? And now you're just putting your own standards and your own interpretation into refereeing the game. Because no. We're no longer evaluating the video. We're now evaluating body language.
No, you can't say that. If a referee is using... The referee is using different things to try and figure out what happened.
Body language is one of them?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
There are certain things. It's like... It's like if somebody gets a nick on the ball, the ball moves a different way. You've got to use everything available.
So you see a handball here.
I am telling you that after about eight times, I now see the handball, and I absolutely agree with Mark. The player himself is trying to make it look as if he hasn't done anything wrong. You know, if that comes off your knee, but you're just running straight out, Ali.
Yeah, but
you
the question,
have to use everything that's available.
But the question by our host, Dan Thomas, was, is this the correct use of VAR? Is this what VAR is there for?
No, yes.
To see the handball, yes, I agree with you. But to evaluate body language, that's a different story altogether.
We're not evaluating body language. We're using...
Well, that's what our super-duper referee just told us.
So when we're looking for it and we're making a decision... We use all kinds of different things that help us get to the right decision.
Oh.
That is what that is.
Oh,
that is
okay.
Part of it.
Okay.
And so a player using his body language, yes, is part of figuring it out.
Luis?
Yeah, I think that Steve is making a fantastic point. That is that you have to use everything that you got. And I think that the referee is being told, for example, if you see an elbow on the face of a player, but you are not sure if the impact is right or wrong, if he's bleeding, it's because the impact is being very clear. So at the end, you can use that to decide if you are going to put yellow card or not. These kind of things, you can use them on the game. And I think there is another way to see it, is that the player, we've seen him once again, this kind of replay that is difficult to see, that he's touching with the hand. But if you let this play going on, the player is telling, no, I touched it, but I had my arms close to my body. So he said, yes, I have touched the ball with the hands, but they were close to my body, because he doesn't know what is going to be on TV. So the referee goes there, check, and because the player have said that he has touched it with the hands, the ball, so it's even easier, because I go, I see, the ball is touched over there, so it's a penalty.
And your question, Dan?
Yes.
Are we using VAR to referee the game? Are we doing the right thing? 100%. It's a foul, right?
Mm.
So we're doing the right thing. That's what VAR's for, to get the right result.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So very
Mark
angry.
Pattenberg will be joining us a little later on. We'll say goodbye to Luis Garcia, as it's a big few days in Spanish football here on ESPN. Plenty of action for you. We'll see Real Betis against Valencia in the Copa del Rey final. That is at 3:30 Eastern here on ESPN+.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, the football world rallying around Cristiano Ronaldo and his family today after he announced on Instagram, "It is with our deepest sadness. We have to announce that our baby boy has passed away. It is the greatest pain that any parent can feel. Only the birth of our baby girl gives us the strength to live this moment with some hope and happiness. We would like to thank the doctors and nurses for all their expert care and support. We're all devastated at this loss and we kindly ask for privacy at this very difficult time. Our baby boy, you are our angel. We will always love you." But of course, question marks now as to whether or not Cristiano Ronaldo will play in tomorrow's match between Manchester United and Liverpool. Here's what both managers had to say ahead of the game.
"As a group, you've been pretty good at refocusing after big moments. You had that euphoria.
How long will that be before I'm needed just so I can go and get some batteries?
Manchester United to come, does that make it even easier just to get the mindset back on and back to Premier League?
Whatever would have happened 3 days ago should be concentrated and focused on the Man United game. Will always be possible. So yes, it makes it easier. I don't know. Whatever would have happened, this is Man United game, and it's for us a massive one. And focus will not be our problem tomorrow.
After last weekend's results, we are still in the race for number four, but in order to stay in that race, we have to win almost every game, and to start with tomorrow. And although we might be the underdogs for most people, we still know that if we raise our level, if we play a top performance ourselves, that we have a chance to get 3 points. We just need to be more compact. We need to find a better balance of what can we do in possession of the ball and what do we need to do in order to defend our own goal. And for sure, we need to be more compact, more aggressive, more on the front foot, but still make sure that we have all the players behind the ball. And this is what we need to show tomorrow against a team who is probably one of the best, if not the best, in producing chances and creating moments in which they can be dangerous in and around the box. And yeah, we need to be on our very, very best defensively, but still have a formation and a lineup and an approach to the game where we can be dangerous ourselves."
About the contrasting fortunes of these sides over the last few years. We saw, of course, the performance Liverpool put in at Old Trafford earlier on in the season. Is there any chance for Manchester United going into this tie, Steve?
Well, there's a puncher's chance. But every single other thing you can think of is against this team. I've seen great Man United teams go to Anfield against worse Liverpool sides and just collapse and not be able to handle the atmosphere. Because you're talking about, for a Manchester United player to go to Anfield in his career, it will be the most toxic atmosphere. I don't care, we talk about behind the iron curtain and all these things years ago. For a Man United player going to Anfield, it is the worst place you want to go and try and play football. And to be able to get a result there, you have to be able to go there and you have to forget about the periphery. Forget everything else that's going on, all the name calling, and just focus on your football. Now, if you do that, you have a chance. But this Man United team, can somebody explain why this team can go and concentrate on the job in hand and not be thinking about all these things I'm talking about? And the fact that they're struggling on the field of play themselves, whether it's home or whether it's away, against a side that cannot wait to get at them. And a side that's going to be carried by, 50,000 Liverpool supporters? I mean, it seems unlikely. Do they have a chance? Of course they do. You've got to play the game, and Liverpool still have to score the goals and win the game, but it's a slim chance.
And Luis Garcia, it is, of course, a Liverpool side that need the win for their title race. Manchester United need the win for their Champions League hopes.
Yeah, definitely. There's something that Steve can say better than me, that is that these kind of games are different. It doesn't matter if you are riding a cruise mode like is Liverpool at the moment, or struggling to get results, being very inconsistent, and it's been United during the whole season. these games are special, are different. That's why it's a classic around the world. Everybody looks to watch these kind of games. Anything can happen because you got enough talent in both sides to end the game in 10 minutes. And it's true that Manchester United, it has been struggling, having a lot of problems into the pitch and out of the pitch because of the whole situation that has been going on during the whole season. But at the end, they need to get these 3 points. And they know that there are going to be chances, that there are going to be space. Liverpool likes to go forward, likes to bring a very high intensity in every single game, but it's vulnerable sometimes at the back. Favorite for Liverpool? Yes, I think they are favorites, of course. But these kind of games is like when you see Real Madrid against Barcelona, these kind of big clashes. You never know what you're going to find. That's why we all enjoy watching these games.
Let's see then if anyone is going for... everyone's going for a Liverpool victory. Luis Garcia going for 3-0. Stevie going for 3-1. Ali, meanwhile, going for a 2-0 victory. Easy.
I wouldn't say easy because of all the things that these guys have just mentioned and the rivalry factor and all of these things that play into a match like this. But even in listening to Ralf Rangnick, I look at a team in Manchester United that's sort of in between. He's asking his players to be compact, to be behind the ball, but we're going to be on the front foot. Well, can you be both at the same time? I don't think so. You can defend well and then try to go on the counter, and you have to have a threat. But I just don't know that Manchester United are a true threat going forward, and I certainly don't think that Manchester United are good enough defensively. They haven't proven to be that, certainly, this season. And so there's going to be spaces for Liverpool. Once the game opens up, then the athleticism and the ability and the speed of play of Liverpool takes over, and it's all Liverpool all the time.
We'll, of course, be discussing this game at length on the next edition of ESPN FC. To join us, we'll be looking back at that big clash between Liverpool and United, and looking ahead as well to Chelsea against Arsenal. Speaking of Chelsea, of course, they're through to the FA Cup final once again as they would take on Liverpool. What a game this should be, live and exclusive on ESPN Plus, Saturday, May the 14th. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, action in Serie A. What's interesting music?
Hello.
Action in Serie A.
I'm confident Italian today.
Napoli missed the opportunity to go level on points with Inter. It looked like they were going to get the win, but for a late goal from Alciari that gives Roma the point as it finishes 1-1. For more on this, let's welcome in Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab, 1-1 doesn't even tell half the story, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, this was a game where I thought Roma played really well, especially in the second half. And Napoli just still have this problem at home. They just dropped too many points. They didn't lose this game. They could have lost it. They've lost, I think, 6 home games this season at the Maradona. That's just not good enough. And it is a blow. Especially, obviously, with Inter and Milan winning on Friday.
Why, Gab? Why can't they get it done at home? Obviously, we saw a couple of late substitutions that maybe bit them late on.
Well, certainly in this game, you can go back and you can point to some of the decisions that Luciano Spalletti made, especially with La Bocca, and then dropping deeper, effectively going 5 at the back. Would they have been better off taking the game more to Roma? You know, possibly. I think it's just one of those things, because if you look at the points that they've dropped at home, they've dropped points at home against attacking teams. They've dropped points at home against smaller teams like Empoli and like Spezia. There's been no real pattern to it. It just seems that, I don't know, maybe like since they renamed the stadium for Diego, things haven't quite worked out the way they hope. I don't know if it's some sort of voodoo stuff, but obviously they were already on the back foot. Now the title seems to be moving further away.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, if they continue like this, they can kiss their title hopes goodbye. As it stands, they're 11-4 to go on and win. Inter, meanwhile, favourites 11-8 on AC Milan. Is that right? That seems strange. 5-1. I'll put my money on that.
Go on, Dan.
I'll see you later, guys. Looking at it, have the bookies got this right? Inter a favourite, Scan?
Well, they don't have the if it's been on a really 5-1. I'm going to join you. Look, I think Inter probably are favorites, but you know this is all predicated on them winning their game against Bologna. And as we've seen as the season go along, Bologna, they're not pushovers. They took points off Milan. They held Juventus to a draw away, down to just 9 men, and they were winning deep in injury time. This was just this past Saturday night. So. No, I mean, Inter, you would think, have to be slight favorites, and maybe they have a more favorable calendar as well. But at this stage of the season, I still think it's very, very tight.
Final question, Gab. How many holidays does Jules have?
You know, I was wondering the same thing. I was supposed to be on holiday last week, so he should have been. And now I'm just jealous. But don't worry, he's going to be back on Thursday to do the Gab and Jules show.
Of course, that's because it was another guest that was wheeled in to be with Gab with Jules' absence. Nader Manua joins him on the latest edition of the show. Be sure to check that out. Some interesting stuff. Pierluigi Collina, who of course works for IFAB, on the length of matches. If you look at the statistics today, you see that there are teams that play 52 minutes, others that play 43 minutes, and others that play 58 minutes. What is accepted as good, actually playing time, is about an hour. One of the things we are talking about is whether it is not worthwhile for all matches to have the same duration. Now, we've talked about this, haven't we, in the past, about maybe whistling when the ball is out of play and playing to a stop clock that is 60 minutes long. Mark Clattenburg is back with us. Mark, let's start with you from an official's point of view. What do you think?
This has been talked about for many, many years. When I first refereed in Champions League 2004, 2005, I think it was around about 40, 42 minutes average playing time, which just wasn't accepted. There was a big, you know, thoughts about what they could do to change the laws of the game. For example, the back pass law, handling the ball from a throw-in. This speeded the game up a bit more. But there could be more law changes. For me, there's two law changes I would love to see to improve football. Would be if a goalkeeper takes too long at a goal kick, you give a corner. If a team takes too long at a corner, you give a goal kick, because that's a lot of time wasting. Also with throw-ins, if they take too long at a throw-in, reverse the throw-in and give it back to the other team. So there is some slight law changes, which I believe that could improve the game. However, there is tactics from some clubs that, for example, late in the match, they systematically put players down to receive treatment, which doesn't get the full allocation of time. So do they find take the time away from the referee? I believe that it should. I think the referee shouldn't be involved in the time. And I think, very similar to other sports, if the referee says, look, we have an injury, we stop the clock. If we have a goal, we stop the clock. If we give a period of time where there is a lengthy stoppage for whatever reason, the clock stops. I don't believe it should stop for everything, but I think that would improve, surely, more time, because if we are only getting 43 to 58 minutes in a soccer match, for me, this is not acceptable, and we need to find other ways to improve this.
I'm drawn to you, Stevie.
Well, I'm not keen on the, if somebody takes too long at a corner, you give a goal kick, or if you're too long in a throw-in. And the reason I don't like it is because it's too subjective. There are too many ways it can go. I like when they make changes that they're clear and crystal, as we spoke about earlier on. like goal kicks, for example. To stop the clock when the ball goes out, and then start it as soon as the ball's put back in play from the goal kick, to me, is something that makes complete and utter sense. There's no grey area whatsoever. Mm. As soon as the ball goes out, you stop the clock there, and then you start it when either the keeper or somebody plays the ball. I like rules that are really simple, and there's no objectivity about it. It's just clear as day.
You mean, and those you, ones you mean no subjectivity?
Well, whatever. I mean.
Okay.
Whichever word's correct. So I like those. I don't like the it comes down to one person deciding
right.
how long it is and
but
how long it is.
Substitutes, injuries, that seems to make sense as well, to stop the clock in those sense.
Well, I think when you're making changes, I think you can't go looking to make three and four. I think if you're making changes to set it on a correct path, let's make a change in one and see how it works. And then if we get used to it, if we like it...
Well, goal kicking doesn't save that much time, is it? It seems to make much more sense if for substitutes and injuries, once the physio step foot on the pitch, then you stop the clock, and when they're off, you start...
Well, you're saying that about it. Well, why are you saying it doesn't affect it that much? It affects everything. Affects it.
No,
so let's start somewhere.
But why start so small?
Start somewhere.
Why not go with injuries and subs?
What? Oh, well, let's just go completely crazy right off the bat then.
But I don't think that's crazy, is it? I think if we're going to approach it like in that sense,
I don't have any problem with it.
Right, you just said it's too
the idea behind it. Again, I like because it's simple.
Right,
and. It's clear to everybody.
Right.
So where do you start? Personally, I would start with the goal kicks.
Right.
You obviously would start with injuries.
Well,
but we just seem to differ.
A variation of that is already happening in college soccer in this country, where when there are yellow cards, the referee, you see him, he signals to the press box, they stop the clock. When there's a stoppage in play that somebody needs treatment, signals to the press box, they stop the clock. It is happening already, And again, I don't think it would be that difficult to implement if indeed you make it clear as to what is it a worthy stop of the clock. And once we have those parameters, then I think it should be very simple to be able to follow it.
Gab, you've been a big advocate, obviously, for this for years.
Yeah, and look, people focus on the time wasting. That's obviously one factor. You're in the lead, you waste time. People will also time waste to break the opposition momentum. This would certainly help deal with that. I think there's two other valid reasons. One of them Pierluigi Collina touched upon, which is, you know, football is played when the ball is in play. Why do we accept the fact that some games have 40 minutes of the ball in play and others have 60 minutes? It doesn't really make much sense. And the other factor is, you know, you think back to what happens at the end of the game, and maybe, you know, Mark can tell us, like, when the referee puts up 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes of added time, I'm not saying it's entirely arbitrary, but it certainly feels like gut feel. And you always have managers and fans who complain it's not enough time added on, and is it Fergie time back in the day and whatever.
Well, seems like a guess,
let's just
right?
get rid of all this controversy. Let's just... But it kind of is, yeah? It's kind of, you know, like that.
Yeah, that's the thing, Mark, isn't it? Yeah. Like, added time seems a bit like a lottery.
Yeah, of course it isn't. Because it's one man's opinion. What he used to do, for example, was add 30 seconds on for a yellow card, 30 seconds for every substitution. However, some didn't take, some took more. So basically it was a bit of guidance that were given. So if there was three substitutions, that was 1.5 minutes. Two yellow cards, that was another minute. So it's 2.5 minutes. You can't put 2.5 minutes, so you play 3 minutes. So a lot of it is calculated in an incorrect way. And going back on to what Stevie Nicol was talking about before about the law change, it wasn't just about simplifying it. When we brought the goalkeeper, the six-second law in, how many times is this law implemented? It's very rare. However, from 20 or 30 seconds that the goalkeeper would clear the ball, it's now 7, 9, 10, 11. And I'm not saying every corner would be a goal kick, every goal kick would be a corner, but what I do see in football is how many times the teams slowly go to take a corner, and I never, ever see that time added on. So it's just trying to find solutions that gives the referee the power, if needed, in extreme situations, to try and quicken the game up.
You know, there was one big reason why I said, you know, if you're going to make changes, you have to go very, very slowly and maybe one little tweak. And one of those reasons is because generally when a law's changed, that's it. They don't change it back. Mm. And one of the worst laws they ever did was they allowed goalkeepers to take a goal kick from either side. All that did was give goalkeepers the chance to waste time. But yet, did they take it back? Because I'm sure they've figured it out by now that the goalkeeper just gets the ball from the other side, takes his time, goes all the way across to the other side, and so the actual law that they made, instead of quickening the game up, actually slowed it down. But I tell you what, they didn't change it back, did they? So that's why you have to be very careful.
How would players feel about this?
I think as long as it's very clear, you then know that you don't have as much room to be creative with time wasting, and eventually you adapt to it. Much like we are seeing from the involvement of VAR and how that is supposed to kind of do away, or at the very least discourage diving, we still see it, but not nearly as much as you once did. And so the time wasting is still going to try to happen, but if you have the clock stop, then what are we doing? Then let's put the ball down and play. So you're going to try to push the envelope as much as you possibly can, but you can't do much when the clock is stopped.
Gab, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here and put some things... It's very difficult, isn't it, to put an argument against the cases that everybody has made. What's the biggest obstacle that IFAB or anyone in the game is going to come up against to try and make these changes? Oh, we've lost Gab. Mark, the point to you.
Yeah, because... One thing IFAB have looked at is even reducing from 90 minutes to 60-minute games. This was one thing, and just have the stop, to have every match played at 60 minutes. So this is where I think Pierluigi Collina is looking at the moment. However, the match at the moment is 90 minutes. I agree with how certain areas of time waste needs to be looked at. If the clock stopped, I agree with Ali that the match will be quickened up. I think goal kicks have quickened up with the new law change that players are allowed inside the penalty area, the defenders. This is quickening things up. So every year IFAB are looking to improve the game, and I believe that there's still areas to look at to make sure that we're getting 70, 80 minutes worth of game instead of what we're getting at the moment, 40.
I think Gab's back with us. Gab, biggest obstacle they're going to face in trying to change these laws?
I think it's going to be an initial reaction from the punditocracy, who generally are conservative. But I think the reason they went with 60 minutes is that that's the goal. A well-played match is generally 60 minutes of ball and play time. So the feel for somebody who's there, for a fan or for a player, it's not really going to change. The match is still going to take about 90 minutes. It's just that you know that you're going to have 60 minutes of ball and play time. Certainly that's the goal. And by the way, I love Mark's suggestion of if there's time wasting, taking too long on a corner, reverse it or a throw-in. Because, frankly, you know, we complain about referees not booking players for time wasting. From my perspective, and I've actually looked this up, I think you can count on two hands the number of players who have ever been sent off in the history of the game, who've ever gotten a second yellow for time wasting. It simply doesn't happen. So what generally happens is once you're on a yellow card, you can time waste all you like, because I don't think any referee's ever going to send somebody off. I'm pretty sure Mark's never given somebody a second yellow for time wasting.
Yeah, Mark.
No, just add to that point as well. How many goalkeepers accept a yellow card in the 89th minute? Because most referees will wait right till the last moment to caution a goalkeeper for time wasting. Exactly. It always happens in the 89th minute, and the goalkeeper's laughing at you because you've actually wasted more time running up to him, giving the yellow card, you've left, and he's laughing again.
Stevie, I just feel, do you want to make a last point? I can feel you on the edge.
I just think you would have chaos. If you've got a referee who can pick and choose whether he gives somebody the corner where we started that,
yeah,
for the goal
kick,
then that makes no sense.
Right.
You're asking for chaos.
What was the word you used, Gab? The punditocracy?
No.
Pundocracy.
Punditocracy.
Punditocracy.
Is that who we are?
What?
I don't know. Are we members?
What? Well, is that a word?
That's it. Mark Clattenburg, thank you very much. Gabby back with us for extra time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. Yesterday, we talked about Stevie being a brave soldier.
Oh, yes. Oh, look at him. Franz Beckenbauer right
after
there.
After kicking his ball. A dog.
What?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's return to our feature game, shall we? Cadiz taking on Barcelona. Perez would be score the only goal of the game 3 minutes into the second half. Let's get some reactions, shall we, from Martes Stegen, who caught up with Gemma Soler after the game.
With Marc-André Ter Stegen, on Thursday it was such a tough game, an elimination from Europa League. You wanted to react, but you were on the table. What do you think it happened today against Cadiz?
Yeah, very hard question right now, no? Because it's not easy for now to analyze exactly what happened. I think we had a tough first half. I think we couldn't really find a way through. And even in the second half, even though we came out and we played a bit better, it was difficult for us to really get there and to create danger. And I think then at the end, always when we got through, the opponent's goalkeeper did a very good job.
Not just talking about this game, before the international break you had just a momentum, you win in the Bernabeu, you were in an amazing streak. What do you think is happening now with the team? It has to do with the physical, I don't know if it's psychological because of Thursday or the injuries. How can you explain that low moment?
Well, I don't want to find any excuses. I think this is not the right moment either. It's up on us. Everybody has many games, and of course we had many games now also with the Europa League. But this is we are used to this rhythm, and it's been a tough few days, tough week. Now we look forward to get a bit of new air and try to be on Thursday back at it again. With hopefully a better result at the end.
I don't know how is the atmosphere in the locker room to stand up and try to fight for the 3 points on Real Arena as you need to clinch the Champions League spot.
Yeah, definitely we're going to go there and try to win the game. Obviously this is always our objective. This was our objective last Thursday, today, and it won't change for Thursday. We have to recover a bit our feeling maybe and try to move forward, no? Because now we can change the situation, what happened now in the last few days. Just go ahead and win these games.
Yeah, the last question. Thursday was very strange with so many away visitors there. Today, again, one of the stands was empty. I don't know if it felt weird to play here in your home like this.
No, it never feels weird to play at home. I don't know what happened on Thursday, but this is nothing I think about. I think we have many things to think about, and this is not something I need to have a comment on. I think it was a lot said the last days, and so I just focus on us, and I hope we can recover our shape for Thursday, which is my thought right now, that it's going good then.
Thank you, Mark. Good luck on Thursday. Yeah, with Coach Xavi, you wanted to react after that hard knockout from the Europa League, and you ended up being defeated by a team in relegation area. How can you explain what happened today?
Well, the first point, I think that we didn't attack so well, but we created good chances to score. I think it's not a good game from our part, but it's a difficult game when they lose time, when they defend very well, very aggressive. It was really difficult and hard to create, but we create enough chances to score. We didn't score. It's a problem. It's a problem for us. It's a very bad week for us. We need to change this dynamic, and we have two games in a short period that we need to keep going. And the first objective, the first goal for the next season, is to qualify Champions League. So, but now it's difficult. It's difficult to accept this lose today.
Thursday was also tough in the field, but also in the stands for what happened today. A part of the stands were empty. I don't know if psychologically this could have affected the players.
Maybe this affected the team a lot. Today the supporters was with us. They were with us, so very good, very good. This is the atmosphere that we need. But we are really disappointed, really upset with the result today.
You already talked about that problem in the final third without being able to score a goal. What can you work till next match day to be able to beat Real Sociedad? It's the main goal now.
I think it will be a difficult game. No, today they defend really well and very short. They lose time. It was really difficult to attack today, but. Even though we create many chances to score, at least to get 1 point, but it was really difficult to play today.
Gracias.
Thank you. Gracias.
Gemma back with us now. Gemma, how things have changed. You think pre-international break, the big win at the Bernabeu, Xavi's here, the saviour, everything is great with Barcelona. Since then, though, really just over the last few days, their season has completely and utterly turned out the Europa League, obviously looking flat in La Liga as well. Kind of a depressing feel, I imagine, at the camp now post this result.
I would love to know the answer, but really, I don't have it. And I asked the main actors, and they don't have it either. They don't have an explanation for what happened earlier today here at the Camp Nou or what happened on Thursday. I'm sure it's some things all together. It's some part physically, the other part, the international break, as you mentioned, did some kind of break in a really good moment. They were having a momentum. Some players were in their best shape and they are injured now. I think both Gerard Piqué and Pedri are capital for this team, and I think it's everything. And at some point, I think today there was some kind of sadness in the stadium for what happened on Thursday, and at some point I guess players got a little bit contagion about that. I don't know. This is not an excuse for sure for a professional team, but you could feel some kind of sadness also because they know that the fight for La Liga, it's over now, and there was some, I can tell with the players, the way they moved, the way when Cadiz goal happened, it was not like the other times that they really stand up and they look for the comeback. Not this time, the movements they have, it was some kind of confusion. And they really are struggling in the forward line, where just a couple of months ago when Adama, Aubameyang, Farran arrived, this team was a completely other story. At some point, maybe it's something physically or something that new effect has somehow disappeared. And I guess like the motivation is not the same as when they were trying to compete for La Liga. Now they are out of Europe. They are out of the La Liga fight. And of course, they need to react because if they do with this dynamic, they will be out of the Champions League spot. Let's not forget, Dan, that this was the goal at the beginning of the season with that team that was a disaster. The main goal, which was quite difficult, was to end up in the four top spots.
Gemma Soler, as always, thank you very much. It is a big week of Spanish football with a full programme of midweek games. It all starts on Wednesday. Real Madrid in action away against Osasuna. That game live here on ESPN+. And then 24 hours later, Barca trying to get something going. They'll be in San Sebastian against Real Sociedad. And then Saturday, it's all about the Copa del Rey final. Real Betis against Valencia. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned. Gab is back with us, Ali and Stevie, of course, as well, for Extra Time, which is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Ali and Stevie, how's the shoulder, Stevie? Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I feel great today.
Look at that.
So, honestly.
Careful.
Right. So,
overdid it.
Field goal is good. What's the signal?
Yeah.
Touchdown. What's the signal?
You can't get that up, but you could shave. That's a good start.
Hey. I got to shave today.
Beautiful. That's very good. Gab Marcotti. Gab, it's the first time I've seen you since you're back from holiday. Where did you go? Nice little tan.
You didn't go anywhere.
He did. He went on holiday last week, didn't he?
No,
you've been away.
You
went nowhere.
Oh, it was Jules. Oh, yeah.
I was supposed to know.
But Gab was meant to go.
And for a walk along the Thames.
Oh, lovely.
Gab was meant to go and everybody got COVID. Oh. Is that right, Gab? We got COVID.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
Stevie, you're well into all of this.
Well, because you were away and Gab was on.
Oh, yes. I see.
He's giving you the update, that's all.
Gab just... You got you, brave soldier, Gab, battling through.
I know. What a moment. Just professional.
For Ali, what kind of signings do Barca need to make it in, in the summer? Would the likes of Koundé or Bremer be good additions at centre-back for them? They're of course, heavily linked to Christensen, aren't they, at Chelsea?
Centre-back is a position that they have to address. I would argue that right-back is a position that you need to address. I don't think Sergiño Dest is the answer, and Dani Alves is not going to last much longer. That is also something that Barcelona must look at. And then you also have to figure out what is it that you think you're going to get in the near future and in the distant future from Frenkie de Jong, and whether that's a move that you need to make in order to say, maybe we make room for somebody else because he's not quite what we think he was going to be.
Gab, is Mourinho getting enough love for what he's done with the Roma team? They're unbeaten since January in the league and in a European semi-final. This is from JM.
He's getting a lot of love from the Roma fans. And I think, you know, ultimately, that's what matters. That's his constituency. He's had a ton of highs and lows. You can mention, oh, look, they're in the Conference League semifinals, they're going to play Leicester. But, yeah, they also lost to something called Bodo Glimt for the second time this season. You know, so he's had the ups and downs. But he's really connected with the supporters. And right now, the hardcore, the match-going fans are still very much with him. You know, in the end, nobody was expecting, would have been unrealistic to expect Roma to challenge for the title or really even top four in his first season. But yeah, no, he's on track. He's spent a ton of money, but the pieces are coming together. And I think next season is going to be when he can really take it to the next level, if he does take it to the next level.
For the boys in the studio.
No.
Have Chelsea regretted selling Tammy Abraham to fund the purchase of Lukaku? One is flying in Rome, and the other has fallen to earth in London.
No, I don't think so. You know, I don't think Tammy Abraham was the answer to their centre-forward problem. So, I think they did the right thing there. They obviously took a little bit. I mean, when you spend 100 million, it seems a little strange, but I think they took a little gamble that Lukaku had matured and actually was a real man now and was all about himself and wanted to carry the team. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out. So, there you go.
There was plenty of evidence for Chelsea to make the decision and saying, hey, has this guy been able to score with enough consistency and show the sort of personality that we think we need in order for him to be an important part of this group? Is this the missing piece? They did their homework, and yep. If you watch Lukaku play for Inter, you would have said, yeah, absolutely. All of us would have signed up and said, yeah, we think this is good for Chelsea. This is exactly what they need. Sometimes moves are not perfect. Sometimes
it doesn't work out, right?
No, it doesn't work out, and it's not the match that they would have wanted. Not Lukaku, and not Chelsea.
Gab, how much love is Tammy Abraham getting in Rome?
Oh, he's getting a lot because Tammy Abraham, I think, like, he's not the most technically gifted player. I think he'd be the first to say that. But he's a phenomenal athlete. He's very, very smart in his movement. He's unselfish. And he works his rear end off. And, you know, for this Roma side, where they are now, he's phenomenal in that role. But, you know, could he have done the job at Chelsea? I don't know. Chelsea had a really long, hard look at him. And I think Chelsea, by the way, just go back to Lukaku, I think they're looking at a plan B as well, potentially, if they need a guy off the bench or somebody in the mix. They really like what Armando Broja is doing at Southampton. So you wonder if they need somebody off the bench, maybe he could come back and see if he develops.
Here we go. Let's talk about your BFF, Gab. Is Carlo Ancelotti underrated? Because he's won 3 Champions League, whereas the perceived GOATs, Pep Guardiola and Sir Alex Ferguson, have only won 2.
fact, I think nobody in history has won more Champions League titles than Carlo Ancelotti, just to be clear. And if Real Madrid win La Liga, he'll be the first to have won each of the big five titles. Like, underrated, overrated, I don't know. I just think there's a reason he continues to get big jobs. I don't think he's perfect. I don't think he acts like he's some sort of visionary. But I think what we're seeing more recently, it's not just him. I think, you know, Jurgen Klopp fits into this too, and one or two others, that, you know, you can go and you can be successful and you can be a good manager and kind of generally be a nice guy. You don't have to be a genius professor type. You don't have to be an Old Testament god. You can just kind of treat people well and generally they'll perform for you. And I think that's what he's showing. I mean, I don't think he's underrated. I think people who know that, you know, he's certainly up there.
Antonio Cassano says he's overrated on Ligue 1. He said no player's ever improved under Ancelotti. What's his beef there?
Yeah, I'm sure Andrea Pirlo would agree with that, given that he was a bit of a wasted talent number 10 when Ancelotti rocked up at Milan, and then after that he became one of the greatest midfielders in the history of Serie A. So, look, Antonio Cassano, very, very gifted player, clearly never quite added up. He was sort of on the Balotelli plan for talent fulfillment. So I think, you know, he's entitled to his opinion. What can I tell you? He's got a lot of wacky opinions.
He had a good time in Madrid, I'll tell you that.
Oh, and by the way, sorry, just kind of let this slide, yeah. Sorry. Wait. Who do most people in Spain think is a favorite for the Ballon d'Or this year? Might that be Karim Benzema?
Oh.
How many Ballon d'Ors has he won in the past? Oh. Zero.
I thought we could let it slide, now? Gab. Yeah. What happened to let it slide?
I'm not saying Ancelotti's improved. Sorry, just something wiped me up.
It's all right. It's all right.
He's over it. Turn the page.
Oh, we need to get Cassano on the show.
Did he have as good a time as you did in Madrid?
He had more resources than I had.
Oh.
So, yeah.
But that didn't limit you, though.
Well, it does limit you a little bit.
Well.
He very much enjoyed himself.
Okay.
If AC Milan gets bought, almost common, will Serie A regulate spending and their behaviour ownership, or will it become like what happened in the Premier League, Gab?
I don't understand what they mean by regulate spending or the Premier League. I mean, if you're referring, you know, right now, the owners, Elliott Management, they've entered into an exclusivity period with a Bahraini fund called Investcorp, and the valuation is about $1.1 billion supposedly for Milan. But, you know, let's be clear on this. This isn't like, you know, crazy man from the Gulf buying a club and chucking money into it. Investcorp is a real fund. They own stakes in companies and whatnot. There's no indication they're going to go on a wild spending spree. It's not like one individual is doing it as a vanity project. So I think that's the direction that they're going in. As far as the Premier League are concerned, you know, they do have spending controls in the Premier League as well. People seem to forget this. If the question is, will Milan be bought by somebody from Bahrain who's going to go and, you know, spend bazillions and turn them into Paris Saint-Germain? No, that's not going to happen.
Stevie?
Did I tell you?
If I was new to soccer, what team would you guys choose for me to root for? Good question. Because you don't want to jump on a bat. You don't want to be a Liverpool, Man City, do you really? Or
why not?
Real Madrid, Barcelona?
Well, you want Burnley?
Burnley could come up nice and performance in the Championship next season.
So wouldn't they say, why should I support Burnley? What are you going to say?
Well, they're gritty. Tough.
Okay. Nice place to visit.
Mr. Nickel, why should I support Burnley?
Why are they calling you Mr. Nickel?
Yeah. Well, they're young, aren't they?
You're a teacher.
Well, to be fair, everybody calls me Mr. Nickel, though.
Do they?
Honestly, I make you feel
calls,
really
old. Who calls you Mr. Nickel?
Everybody.
Who?
People.
People?
People that I seem to can talk to.
Who are you talking to? The police.
Well, it's usually preceded by, can I see your insurance and your driver?
Well, yes, exactly.
About, if we're not going to mention sort of the big ones, about Athletic Club Bilbao.
Oh, I thought you said Athletic Madrid then, just calling him up.
No, no. I wouldn't do that to you.
Burnley seems a good option compared to Athletic Madrid.
No.
Yeah, Athletic Club, nice story.
There's a nice story.
Great city.
Great city, great food.
Great food.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's not bad.
Great environment to go and watch the game.
Yep.
Why not?
Burnley. Burnley.
Great city. Shut up, great Mr. Nichols. Gab?
Well, Athletic Bilbao is a good choice. If you want to move away from some of the hipsters' choices, you could, like Sampaoli, or I could come up with a whole slew of Bundesliga clubs that Derek Ray would approve of. But yes, you could. There's a lot you could mention there, so I'll purposely steer away from that. And I might suggest, here in the Premier League, I might suggest a club like Brighton, where there is a strong connection with the fans. Or in Serie A, I think, as well, Atalanta. Gorgeous city again, great food, tons of local kids coming through the system, although not in the first team so much right now. And every year, the Atalanta Ultras organize this three-day festival in the countryside, where they go and they have monster truck rallies and rock concerts, and the players kind of have to show up at the party because they're invited and stuff. And there is, and obviously, as you know, every kid who's born in Bergamo is given an Atalanta jersey and a certificate where their parents are invited to, unless they have ties to another part of the country or they're fans of other teams, where they have to pledge that they're going to raise their kid to be an Atalanta fan. Because ultimately, you really should support your local club. If
what
you don't do that,
what kind of crowds
you're
do Atalanta
probably
get?
A bandwagon jumper.
What kind of crowds do Atalanta get?
With a new stadium?
With a stadium?
30,000, something like that.
Are you still comparing it to Turf Moor?
Well, what's the population of Atalanta?
All right, here we go. Geography class.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering where the
population of Bergamo, Stevie.
I beg your pardon, Bergamo. What's that?
Is about, I think it's a couple hundred thousand. But the main thing is they're 25 miles from Milan, where there are two very big clubs. So it's not like it's one of those regional clubs that has this enormous catchment area.
Okay. Any more questions, Stevie?
I just wondered how the certificate and the strip and all the newborn babies were. How that was working out, that was all.
Oh, early days.
I just wanted to know.
Baby steps. Stevie, 10 years ago, Scotland had Ferguson, Dalglish, Moyes, Coyle, McLeish, Lambert, Keane, all managing in the Premier League. Mm. Right now, there is only Moyes. The managers of Celtic and Rangers are also not Scottish. Are you concerned about the state of Scottish coaching?
Well, if only we had a Scottish coach.
Keane's
I don't think he's getting to do.
Keane? Oh, it's different. No? Anyway.
I don't think he's getting to do with. I mean, look at the Premier League. It seems like the Germans are taking over the Premier League right now.
Yes.
So I guess a lot of these things are kind of cyclical.
Yeah.
But as to why there's not a Scotsman, really, other than Moisey, with the character, shall we say, of your Dalglishes and your Fergusons, I think that's to do with society more than anything else.
Oh, here we go.
Deep thoughts. Here we go.
Well, I just don't think they breed men like that anymore.
Right.
The upbringing that Scotsmen used to have was part of the reason why you had these strong men.
Okay.
These football guys, real football men, as we called them.
But do you think football would accept them now as they did then, with that strong man alpha attitude?
Well, that's what Klopp's got, right? Strong man alpha attitude.
Yeah, but Klopp's a little bit more lovable than even Fergie or Dalglish, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah. He goes out his way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas their thoughts were, you love me the way I am, I'm not going to go out of my way to make you love me.
Right.
Whereas Klopp clearly has a little bit of the today's society about where, you know, it's a good idea to have people to like you as well as respecting you.
There you go.
You just want to be called Mr. Nickel.
Gav, did you want to add to today's society?
No, it's funny. I mean, first of all, when you were rattling off the list, that, like, you know, it was just weird having Owen Coyle, with all due respect, in the same breath as Dalglish and Ferguson. Yeah. But I was seeing what he said about what you were saying about sort of alpha males. I mean, the one Scott who is in the Premier League still, Davy Moyes, I mean, he's certainly not alpha. He's a very, very nice man who's very accommodating, and yet he is a success. In fact, if you kind of look at the top of the table, maybe there is something in it. I mean, without getting into personal preferences, but there's certainly more warm and fuzzy people than there were, you know, 10 years ago. Take away Conte, who's obviously not warm and fuzzy. And, you know, Pep can be a little spiky sometimes, but generally most other people are more the cuddly, emotionally connected, high EQ types than we saw back then.
Yeah, but that's only because you've got to be like that. It's like every single manager today gets in front of a microphone and comes out with all this claptrap about, this is the way I play the game.
Right.
My players haven't quite got on board with the way I want the game to be played and all this. I mean,
philosophy is the word you're looking for.
Yes, aye. Can you talk to us in a proper language where we all understand it and stop coming out with your nonsense with your degrees and all this garbage?
With degrees?
Yeah.
Oh, damn your education.
Who needs this education?
Yeah.
Okay, final question, kind of on a similar point. Stevie, can coaching truly overcome talent? For example, if Dan and you were coaching two teams and he had a more talented one, could you close the gap?
Well, you can. It's possible. Listen, I played for a team in Liverpool
at the time, the
best team in the land, and we got beaten in a cup final by Wimbledon.
Right.
And there's no way did they have anywhere near the ability we had, but they got organised and went about it in a certain way. So yes, it's not always about ability. You have to match the other things that the other team has.
Stevie, but that's not because Wimbledon didn't beat you because they had a better coach than you did. You wouldn't say that, would you?
No, I didn't say that. I'm probably more on.
Well, that was the question, though.
Well, so was I. I didn't actually look at it like that.
Right.
I was thinking more of just in a game.
Right. But if I took over Manchester City and you had Norwich, could your Norwich side beat my Manchester City?
If we were to play you 10 times, we could beat you once.
Why? What would you do?
Well, because for the same reason that Wimbledon beat us in the cup final. And it has nothing to do with having a better coach.
So if Manchester City played Norwich 10 times, Norwich would win once?
They might win once.
Why? What would you say? What makes you say that?
Because you're the coach.
Is he taking the mic?
I'm not taking the mic. I don't see what argument you're making.
Because what you do, if you're Norwich City playing against Man City,
right,
in the 10 games, you're going to do the same thing.
Right.
You're going to sit behind the ball and you're going to try and give them nothing. You're going to try and get a breakaway, score a goal, win the game 1-0.
But if it worked, it didn't work 9 times out of 10, why would it work on the 10th time?
Because you don't have a choice. You've got to do it.
Right.
What else are you going to
do?
That
doesn't answer the question. What's going to be the difference?
Well, right, hold on. So you agree that it's possible that we could win that 1 out of 10?
No, I don't. I don't get the argument.
Oh, don't be stupid. Don't be stupid. We could play Wimbledon 10 times, right? And they
Why
could
do you keep
maybe.
Bringing out Wimbledon?
Because they could maybe beat us once, right?
Right.
Yeah. So then, if you're Sam Allardyce or Sam Allardyce,
right,
he'll turn around and say, we outcoached them. They don't like it. But and the truth is, you're doing the same thing, and it's got nothing to do with the coaching.
But just in general, the fact that Dan is coaching a team, I don't think they're set up for success. Just in principle.
Well, because there's so many different ways you look at
Stevie,
that. Look,
Stevie,
are we talking about winning the league?
What you're underestimating.
Sorry, Gab.
You need to consider that if Dan were to coach Norwich, Dan would come and he would play his brand of football, and he would implement his philosophy in a granular way throughout all levels of the club and be emotionally collected to the players. Yeah. You can put a value on that.
And we know Wimbledon would have beat Liverpool because they outside problem. You, Steve.
You know, because I've just told you
the,
10 times.
The
question can be taken a few ways.
I don't think it can.
What is your coaching philosophy,
right,
Dan?
If the question was...
I want to hear his coaching philosophy.
As if he's got a coaching philosophy.
But that's exactly the point. I want to hear his coaching philosophy.
As if I have a philosophy in anything.
I want to see how he's going to get emotionally connected with the players.
Right. Yeah. philosophy. Don't get sacked. Don't say anything stupid. That's it.
Nobody's going to win a league title. Put it that way. Nobody's going to win a league title.
No, but that's we're talking about league titles.
I'm just telling you the way the question's phrased, right?
The question is, if you're coaching two teams, and one was more talented than the other...
To win what? A game?
A
league title?
Yeah, this seems quite simple.
So why are you arguing about Norwich beating Man City once then? Why are you arguing about that?
Because they wouldn't.
How do you know they wouldn't?
Because they haven't beaten Manchester City in 700 goals in the Premier League.
No, they haven't played them 710. They haven't even played them ten times. So you can't say that. You've just decided.
I'm sorry.
You've just decided.
I don't know why I've decided that. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Same way that you said that Wimbledon would never beat us in the cup final.
Oh, dear me. That is it. By the way, if you want to look at the highlights of that cup final, was it Vinnie Jones on Steve McMahon? How many seconds into that where he should have got sent off?
I was by early doors.
If there was VAR.
Do you know what? Can I just say this though? It's the most annoying thing.
I know.
It really is. You know, you hear all this, and I know all these myths are great.
Yes. Right. Who was it that broke their foot and couldn't take their shoe off for 48 hours?
Oh, Terry Gibson. I caught Terry Gibson on the Friday morning. He got injured.
Yep.
Right.
He played
couldn't walk. Couldn't walk after he finished training, and was scared to take his boot off because it would flare up.
Yeah.
So he never took his boot off between there and the game. So you're telling me that he went everywhere with a football boot on and nobody noticed?
Well, maybe he had to sell them. I can't take this off.
Nobody noticed. And then all this nonsense about we outsighted him in the tunnel on the way there, on the way to, like walking out. Are you having a laugh? There's like five players on our team had won the Champions League. Everybody had won a league title. Johnny Barnes had been to the Maracanã and walked around 11 Brazilians and stuck it in the back of the net. I mean, and they're trying to convince people, and actually have convinced people, that because they were singing a song in the tunnel, that's why they beat us. Why would they not come out and say, you know what, we defended brilliantly, we had a great plan, and we got one chance, and we took it, and we won the cup. And we would go like that, well done.
Yeah, that's it. But I'll tell you what, that's just the beautiful thing about football. It's like if Norwich played Manchester City 10 times, they're going to win one of those games. That's just what happens.
We just witnessed a miracle here. His arms went up. The shoulder is better. The shoulder is better.
I never noticed that.
The shoulder.
All we need is Wimbledon.
Yes. It's a touchdown.
I'll tell you what, you don't have that.
On tomorrow's show, Terry Gibson's here.
What?
Oh, Terry, how's your foot? Terry, why have you got a football boot on?
I can still have a football boot on, can't
40 years later, he's still got his boot on, so his foot doesn't swell up. Honestly, he's a prick.
The good thing is that you've let it go, Steve. You've turned the page.
That is it. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Liverpool against Manchester United. Of course, the big game in the Premier League. We'll be discussing that, so be sure to join us.